be reach maturity and fruition. That's really where I'm coming from. Doesn't matter who's in the seat of the presidency for us to do that. Who's ever in that seat, we have to find a way so that we win. And on that note, Brother Keedy, InterlightRadio.com, unfortunately, has to leave this conversation as we prepare for our next simulcast and with Sonya Barrett and the Sovereign Mind Radio. And again, for those of you that want to maintain contact with me here at InterLight Radio, simply send me an email at InterLightRadio@yahoo.com. Our phone number is 310-928-7733. And as always, it's really our great pleasure to extend our arm out to LIBRadio.com on these simulcasts. And Brother Keedy, obviously, I'll be talking to you later on today and during the week. Hotep,
all right,
to the family.
Respect. And
for those of you listening via InterLightRadio.com, we'll be starting our live simulcast in approximately 3 minutes with Sonya Barrett and the Sovereign Mind. Today's guest is Jim Matato, and he's making a return visit as he's going to be talking about some of the hidden secrets, if you will, in regards to the tax system in this country. So we'll be starting up in approximately 3 minutes, and we hope that all of you will stick around and learn about some of the hidden secrets to the tax system in this country. Coming up later in today's program, we're going to be Spirit Halima and Sister Myra with the Cosmic Womb. That'll be at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, followed by Tahuti Mat Ra and Tangerine Martin and their guest Pearl Jr. as they look at issues as it pertains to blacks and relationships and much, much more today. So stay with us all day here at InterLightRadio.com. We are the Healing Frequency.
Body Magazine. Stay informed of the latest technologies, strategies, and organizations behind our food supply, our minds, body, and overall health, bringing you unexposed global views, advanced products and services, and informative interviews. Travel to unheard-of places. NCB peels away fear by exploring the science of consciousness. We are about freedom. Subscribe to New Corporate Body Magazine. Explore your reality and expand your mind. Advertise your products and services with us. NCB is a printed publication and also available online. Check us out at www.newcorporatebody.com or call 949-249-3825. That's www.newcorporatebody.com, 949-249-3825. New Corporate Body Magazine and Sovereign Mind are a division of Timeline Publishing, Incorporated. Sovereign Mind Radio, and I'm your host, Sonia Barrett, encouraging you to join me each week as Sovereign Mind explores the nature of the game, the game players, and the strategies in place to hold you spellbound and distracted. Informed guests continue to bring insight to the silent side of corporations, spiritual concepts, science, and technology, and the manner in which they influence your choices. As always, the idea is to explore concepts and ideas that will stretch your imagination and potential. You may submit your questions by email to innerlightradio@yahoo.com or by calling in at 310-928-7733. Today's guest, Jim Matatal, was on the show only a couple of weeks ago discussing topics regarding sovereignty from the system itself. Needless to say, an hour ran by pretty quickly, and so he is here for part two. Now, should you decide to call in, please be sure to turn down your speakers. I would also like to say that if nothing else, this information is valuable, in the sense that one is made aware of the structures in place by which our lives are being governed and its impact on our choices. Our overall life, of course, and our evaluation of living a life based on the system's definition of success and failure. Having this knowledge does not mean that we must all go out and file papers, but more than anything, we must seek inner sovereignty. A set of papers does not automatically define one's freedom. And I wanted to make that very clear, as there, you know, I get lots of emails, but people are wanting to go and file papers and become sovereign. But I think most importantly, that sovereignty, those papers have to be backed up by you on the inside. It has to be an inner. And even if you never do the papers, you still have the right to be free, but you have to understand that level of freedom. So I brought Jim here to present that kind of insight in assisting you on all levels of you working at obtaining that kind of freedom. All right, so I'm going to give just a brief background again on Jim Matatal for those of you who might not have heard the last show. Jim Matatal, who I've known for quite a few years, Jim has taught and assisted those wishing to act sovereign in their life's journey by providing the tools necessary to do so. He is masterfully informed on the fictitious status by which we operate, this fictional self known as the straw man. He educates others on the true nature of law and the manner in which we have been defrauded in our commercial operation under the UCC code. He has been a tax consultant for 40 years based on an understanding of misinterpreted tax laws and the defining point between one being classified as an employee or a sovereign man or woman, supported by one's right to a livelihood, one's right to earn a living. He graduated from CSULA with a BS in business management, and he has been called on as a federal expert witness on taxes. Again, you are listening to Sovereign Mind live on Interlight Radio and BBS Radio on Wednesday, December 10th. Jim Matatal, welcome to Sovereign Mind once again.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, Jim, we covered a lot of things the last time, and we didn't cover a lot of things. I don't think if we did the show 200 times, we would cover everything. So
there's a lot of information out there, and a lot of misinformation. Things to know if
yeah.
you're interested, of course.
That's true. Now, with that being said, first thing I want to ask you is, what process would you suggest for someone just venturing out in investigating the sovereignty process because of all the confusion? What would you say to somebody who says, you know what, I think I really want to start looking into this?
Well, I would say that the very first thing a person ought to do is do something that the government doesn't want you to do, and that is read the Constitution and understand it for this country. And the reason is because once you read that, you'll see that what's going on is in direct violation most of the time with what the Constitution says that we as a sovereign people of this country are supposed to be, I hate to use the term under, because we're not under the Constitution. The Constitution is limitations on the government, not limitations on us.
Jim, can you speak up a little bit more? A little bit.
Okay. Is this any better?
Yes.
You're breaking up a little bit, but I'll repeat that. The Constitution for the United States of America is limitations on the government. It's not limitations on the people. The Constitution was put together by the people for instructions to the government on how they operate, not on how the government tells us how to operate. But over time, through the government controlling education, which our founding fathers said never let the government do, which of course we did, out of greed basically, we didn't want to pay for the cost of education, so the government offered it for free, and our grandparents and on up decided to take advantage of that so they could have that money for themselves. But unfortunately, the cost is knowledge. And knowledge of what you do to protect yourself and how to keep the government within the confines of the Constitution and protect yourself from the government when they go outside those confines. So, if you understand the Constitution and you understand what it's saying and the limitations imposed on the government, you'll find that the reason that the government is controlling you is because you gave them permission to do so. Generally, it's permission which you did not realize you were giving them. Most people don't realize that a license of any type is permission by competent authority to basically giving you permission by competent authority to do that which is illegal, a trespass, or a tort. Well, you look at things like marriage, a marriage license. You know, where is marriage an illegal, a trespass, or a tort? Or you take a look at traveling one place to another. We all know we have the right to go anywhere we want, as long as it's not violating somebody else's property rights. So where is getting in your car, moving down the road, become some kind of privilege and not a right? It actually isn't, unless you're involved in business use of the road, as opposed to just using it to go from one place to another, not making money during that time, like a mover or a chauffeur would. So other than those special exceptions, we have the right to use the road. And when you think about this, you got a house. Where did the government get the right to tax you on your own property. Where did the government get the right to tax you on your dog or your cat with a license fee? That's your dog. That's your cat. That's your property. Where do they get the right to charge a fee for you using your own property? And once you read the Constitution, you'll see that that's not what's allowed. But you gave them permission, and you gave them permission by virtue of what you did and things you did that you didn't even know that's what you were doing. And, of course, that's because of the ignorance that we have in our education system, which does not teach you how to defend yourself against government encroachment, but instead teaches you how to sue your neighbor, how to sue your friends, and how to sue everybody other than the government. The government you're just told to leave alone and do what they say, and you'll be okay. Just the opposite of what should actually happen.
Wow. Well, well, you hear it here, folks, so you can, when you email me, you already hear what Jim is saying in terms of getting yourself, you know, educated more than anything else. You have to, and this stuff takes a while. It just takes a while. I went to, what was that, two Saturdays ago, Jim? What was that meeting? And,
which one are we talking about?
It was two Saturdays ago in,
Grapevine?
Yeah, I think
so.
Okay,
yes, I remember which one you're talking about.
But that's, it's just so much people. Information.
There's a ton of information, especially when you look at the laws that have been passed by government.
Right.
And if you ever went into a law library and you look at the laws themselves, which is called the code, and it's not called the code for nothing because you read the code and you wonder what the heck they're talking about many times. It's encoded in a sense. And that takes up maybe, if you look on a wall, you know, maybe, one at a law library from the top shelf down to the bottom, and about maybe 12 feet wide. And if you just fill a shelving of that size full of books, those are laws. Now, you also have things called regulations. Now, regulations is the interpretation by the agency of how to properly fulfill that law. Now, if you take those and look how many those are, if you take that one set of shelving I was talking about and multiply it 100 times, you've got the regulations.
Only that much.
Yes. And this is, this is what they, and also, by the way, it's in the law that you're presumed to know the law. So you're presumed to know all that stuff. That's the presumption they operate under. So obviously, if you know all that stuff, and you're dealing with these people, they don't need to inform you because you already know. It's in the law. You already know all this stuff, so they don't need to tell you about it. They don't need to tell you when you sign that thing saying I'm a U.S. citizen that you're actually claiming you're in some kind of territory regulated and governed by the government, and that according to the Constitution, as someone from that area, you have no rights other than what they grant you statutorily or civilly. And obviously, I don't think any of us want to be in a position where people in Washington, D.C., which they call it District of Columbia, most of us call it District of Criminals, make all these laws. And if they can't even, and you look at Washington, D.C. and compared to all the other states, and Washington, D.C. is a territory. But here, the seat of government rests. They write all the rules, they have the strictest gun controls, etc., and it is the highest crime in the country.
Mm.
So, if government...
This is what you're up against.
Yes, and these are the people who say that you should obey their laws because it's good for you. Well, it's not
right.
Good for you, it's good for
it's good
them.
Good for them. Mm-hmm.
Now, that's why... go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, this is what people are up against when you rush out and you decide you're going to just file papers. I mean, looked into this just many years ago. This is, I don't know, it's been over 10 years. It's back in the early 90s. And I still don't know anything. I mean, it's so endless, you know. And so when people run out there to go doing this stuff, you cannot just entrust someone else to know this for you. It just doesn't work that way. I mean, that's even the people who say they know end up in jail. So you've got to be diligent at educating yourself.
Well, first of all, have somebody knowing it for you. That would be like somebody claiming your rights for you. Only you can claim your rights. Nobody can claim it for you. If somebody's claiming it for you, then you are their slave.
Absolutely.
Or their subject.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order for you to claim your rights, you have to know what those are. And if you don't know what those are, then you don't have any. That's the way
yep.
it works.
Mm-hmm.
So you need, that's what's detailed in the Constitution. Now, if you get an annotated Constitution, annotated means that they put in explanation about the various sentences and paragraphs, et cetera, in it to give you clarification on how it's been held and what it means. That will go a long way in helping a person understand what's being said, and in each, you know, part of it, especially the amendments. The amendments was put in, the first 10 specifically, for the purpose of making sure the government understood it had to keep its hands off the people. That's what they're there for. And a lot of the states weren't going to pass the Constitution unless it was amended with these articles. And so it was. And thus mm-hmm. it got passed. And fortunately for the people who insisted that that be done, because without that, government has really run amok. Heck, it's run amok with it. And it runs amok even worse if those constraints weren't identified. The presumption by the people who didn't want that in there was that the state governments and the people of the state would keep the federal government in line. But as we can see, that has not happened. They've fallen victim to, in my opinion, greed, taken money and from the government, and therefore being under the authority of the government, the federal government in this case.
Mm.
I mean, you take a look at taxes that you pay. Let's forget about income tax. Let's just say all the other taxes, the excise tax, the sales tax, the gas tax, and an endless list of things, property tax, et cetera. They take all this money and they give it, every state, to the federal government. And then the federal government takes that money and doles it back out to the state. Now, why the heck would anybody in their right mind do that? But that happened because the government went bankrupt, the federal government. And each state then had no money. There was no money for the state to use. And in order to get these Federal Reserve notes, they had to give the money they collected from the people to the federal government. And then the federal government passed back these notes. And this is just a quick Reader Digest version of what happened. But essentially, that's what happened. And speed limit went down to 55 miles an hour across the country. California refused. And the government said, well, that's fine. If you don't knock it down to 55, we're not giving you your money.
Mm.
So California complied.
Wow.
So they use that as a hammer over the country, the state government and the people therein to get them to do what the federal government wants. And the first mistake is to give them the federal government the money in the first place. But that's what's going on, and you cannot trust the state governments because they're looking at being able to pay for all their expenditures, and they can't do it if they don't get this money from the federal government.
Right. Now, Jim, I want to we're going to go a little bit into another angle. The mortgage crisis right now. Okay, but before you talk directly about that, can you explain in reference to the whole concept of a mortgage or the mortgage fraud then, or the mortgage structure?
Well, first of all, most people are under the mistaken idea, and of course they're supposed to be under this mistaken idea, but they're under the mistaken idea that the company, the bank or the mortgage company or whoever's lending them the money, whatever corporation it is taking that corporation's money, and they're lending it to them. And that is not true. They're not lending you their money. What they're doing is you sign a note, and if you watch carefully the sequence of how you get the mortgage, when you buy a new house, you'll see that you sign the note before you sign, or you sign the note after you sign the grantee. And in this sequence of things, you sign the grant deed, you now have the ownership of the property. Then you sign a note against that property, and you give it to the mortgage company or the bank. The bank then takes your note and deposits it into an account, and then immediately pulls all the money out. So that's your money they're pulling out. They use it then to pay the house, et cetera, et cetera. So they've used your money from your note to pay off the house. And then they charge you interest on you giving them the money to use to pay off your house.
That's a good scheme.
That's a really good deal, right? So you're paying interest on your money that you created. You created with a note. And if you think that how do you create money with a note, take a look at the stuff you carry around your pocket called what you call money. And you read right across it, it's a Federal Reserve note. So who created that? That's Federal Reserve. It's not money. If you look at the federal cases, the Supreme Court cases, various appellate cases at the federal level, and a number of state cases, they'll tell you that this stuff, these Federal Reserve notes that we carry, are not money, and they don't pay for anything. They simply discharge. What that means is, if you have a note on a house, and you go get a new loan, okay, they'll give you a new note, will they not? And that new note discharges the one you currently have on there. So after it's discharged, do you now owe no money on the house anymore? No, of course not. You have a new note. You merely replace the old one with the new one. When you take Federal Reserve notes and discharge your debt, you haven't paid for it. You've merely replaced who you owe the debt to. In this case, the Federal Reserve. So that is how it works. And this is what the courts have told you. Of course, you've encouraged that only attorneys can understand these things, so don't read them so you can remain in ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the way
the process goes. Now, in terms of the madness now that's going on with this mortgage situation, somehow everything that you just said anyway, I mean, I guess that just sort of clarifies it, but it's just interesting because did a lot of these people end up with balloon mortgages or What would you say is, you know, really happened here? Besides people with their jobs, what did they really do? And did they see this coming, do you think?
Oh, sure. They knew it was coming in 2002. And I know a lot of people don't like Bush and his administration. However, if you go back and look at the records, the newsreels, et cetera, you'll see that in 2002, Bush gave a speech saying, hey, we've got a mortgage crisis coming, and it is going to really be bad, and we need to do something about it. And they put in legislation to do that. Now, there are various people, and they happen to be Democrats at that time, on the take, I use that term, they were being funded by the mortgage industry, their campaign, et cetera, and they said, no, there's no problem. Everything's solid. Look, they've worked great all this time, and there's no problem. There's not going to be a problem. And these very people, like Barney Frank and some others, were, in fact, the contributors and the creators of the problem because they could have headed it off early. But they didn't. And when the legislation hit the floor, the Democratic Party, which is the one who stopped it from being put into law to get this stuff regulated so we wouldn't have the crisis that we have. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. The important thing is that, yes, they knew about it. They talked about it a number of times prior to this thing coming up. And the same people were stopping it from actually getting any legislative enactment or a legislative action on what was needed to prevent it. So that's the problem. They knew about it, but they didn't want to do anything about it. And it all has to do with money, obviously.
Right.
Everything in Washington has to do with that.
Right. And that governor, was it the governor? Of course, I'm really not great with names sometimes. When he came out and spoke out on this, God, what was his name? Anyway, and then they brought up a huge scandal on him when he exposed more about the fact that they, you know, they really were aware of this.
Yeah,
do you remember his name? I don't, you know who I'm talking about.
Not off the top of my head.
Yeah, this
but
was.
If you look back in, you know, at what's happened in Congress and other stuff, the people who blow the whistle suddenly are investigated. Many
yes.
of them indicted. Some of them go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
That is the risk you take. If you stand up for what's right, you risk going to jail.
Absolutely. Well, his scandal was having an affair. I can't remember his name. He went to law school with someone I know. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. It's just the way it is. You speak up, yes. And I'm sure they know before they speak up that, you know, they run the risk of that. But sometimes you just have to do what you've got to do.
Well, yeah, it's a matter of principles.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, the sovereign men and women of this country are operate by principle, not by fear and threat by government personnel. Unfortunately, the people who are in the government, like the Congress people, are under the authority of the government, whereas the sovereign men and women are not.
Mm.
If you look at the Declaration of Independence, if you look at many of the state constitutions, you'll see that they all pretty much say that government is instituted for the purpose of protecting the people. Government is not instituted for the purpose of protecting itself from the people, because
right.
the people created it. It's like the slave saying, I got to protect myself from the master. No, the master controls you. He owns you. And
mm-hmm.
you're not there to protect yourself from him. You're there to do his bidding as
mm-hmm.
as a slave or a subject. But as a sovereign, you only answer to God, and therefore the government answers to you. Because you're
right.
the creator of the government. The government is your servant.
Mm.
And unfortunately, the people in there have forgotten that. But it's our job to remind them.
Right, right. First, we have to remember that.
Yeah. We have to know that ourselves.
We have to know that ourselves. Yeah, absolutely. It was Governor Spitzer, New York.
That's who it was.
And he's back in the news again, actually, yesterday. But anyway... and my next question is sort of out of nowhere with this, but I'm going to bring it up because other people have mentioned this before. This whole thing with the Treasury Department, and people, again, have gotten in trouble with this, so I'm kind of trying to bring up some things that people get in trouble for, and because sometimes the whole idea of having a lot of money sometimes rule intelligent decisions, and you don't have enough information.
Intelligent decisions, unintelligent. So.
Exactly. I would suggest not doing this. I've known a few people that have gotten in trouble behind this. But anyway, it's tied into this, the whole concept of the Treasury Department, you know, associated with every individual with a social security number and that kind of thing. People have tried to access these funds. In many different ways.
You're talking about the Treasury account.
Right.
And I know what you're talking about for the benefit of the listeners. The theory is that when you are born, of course you're assigned a Social Security number now, but you're given a birth certificate. And then you eventually get a Social Security number. And with that, there's what's called a Treasury Direct account, which is an account set up in your name, actually the fiction's name with a Social Security number. And it is funded with all the presumed amount of all the money you're going to make over your lifetime. And that's taken as an average, of course. And then this account, just like a mortgage, is funded with all this money, has all this money created, and the note is your birth certificate, etc. Then the presumption is it's got all this money sitting there for us to go out and get and use for various purposes dealing with the government and other things. Well, first of all, my question is, why would the government set up an account loaded with millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars, and then just let it sit there? I have never seen the government let any money sit anywhere. And so the presumption that there's money sitting in this account is a flawed presumption, in my opinion. Because as soon as the money gets in there, they will take it out and they will use it to spend it on things, which is all Congress does. They just spend money. And which is why Will Rogers said that that no freedom of the American people is safe while Congress is in session. And then President Reagan said the 9 most feared words in the country is that I'm from the government and I'm here to help. So these things, where even the people in the government are saying that the government is not your friend, and the idea that the government will not spend money is foolish. So anyway, when this account is created, if this account exists, then what happens is government would have taken all the money out. Just like when you write a note to the mortgage company. They just don't let the money sit there. They empty it. They empty the account. Well, the government does the same thing, and then they spend it. Most people, again, don't think about where do property taxes and these bonds that the various state governments issue, where the heck do those things come from?
Right.
Well, they come from the value of the property that you gave to the government, and they issue it against that money. When you buy a house and then you record your grant deed in the county recorder's office, you're granting it to the government to have an interest in it, and now they can issue bonds and other things like that against it. And that's, you know, if that's what you want to do, that's fine. I don't think it's such a good idea myself.
Right.
I've never found the government to be that responsible with my
property. Oh my gosh, yeah, that's an interesting one. Yes, because that was a big thing, is people talking about the fact of, you know, what we're each valued at based on the birth certificate and all of that, but with not enough information to back it up. And so, yes, I've seen people get in quite a bit of trouble behind creating their own checks.
Yes. Well, and that's true. And just think about this. If you had emptied out your own bank account, and then you go write a bunch of checks against what you know to be an empty bank account, would they kind of get upset with you? Sure they would. So if you're writing these checks on a Treasury account, Treasury Direct account, which is empty, should they get upset with you? Sure they should, because you're writing against an empty account. So my suggestion is don't do it. Writing checks against an empty account.
Plain and simple, don't do it. And don't listen to anybody that tells you to, and don't take any checks from anybody based on that. I've seen it go down all kinds of ways.
There is the concept of the fact that this country's in bankruptcy, and that you can have the Treasury discharge your obligation since you can't pay for anything because there's no money. There's only Federal Reserve notes. That's a different concept. It's not the same thing as a Treasury Direct account where you write checks and other things like that against this particular account. So although they may sound similar in certain ways, they're actually quite different.
Okay. All right, so that's where education comes in once again.
Right.
Yeah, now
informed before step four.
Now, next thing I want to touch on, I didn't get to the last time, is the difference between a trust, the importance of possibly setting up a trust for those people who have mentioned that, in terms of their business or even their personal life, as opposed to a corporation, because, you know, a lot of people, there's a lot of commercials going on about setting up a corporation. Well, I understand on one level it's good, but in the, you know, in the bigger picture, it's not, it just doesn't protect you the same way.
No, corporations anymore don't protect you like they originally did, because the courts have bypassed a lot of that protection. All they have to do, really all anybody has to do, just make some kind of claim that you, as the officer of the corporation, in some way did something wrong, knowingly, and they'll then bypass the corporate shield and go after your personal assets. So the corporation doesn't protect you like it used to. It still offers some types of the tax advantages, et cetera. For instance, if you wanted to go public, go on the, you know, the public stock exchange, you really have to be a corporation or a special type of partnership. But outside of that, if that's not what you're planning on doing, there's a lot better ways to go. And trust is a good one, as long as it's set up properly, and long as it is an irrevocable trust. There's a lot of things called corporate souls, which large religious organizations have used, especially the Catholic Church, for instance, to protect themselves. And there's a number of other entities. Probably the simplest, though, for most people would be a trust, simply because a trust, by definition, is a contract between two people for the benefit of a third, called the beneficiary. So the third person. So you got the creator, the trustor, and you got the trustee who runs the trust. And the creator technically and usually puts in the assets that the trust has, that the trustee is going to run for the benefit of the beneficiary. Now the nice thing about this is it's all done by contract, and contract, according to the Constitution, cannot be interfered with by the government. So since you have a contract, the government can't step in and say, no, you have to run your contract this way or that way. That's unconstitutional. So a trust gives you, in my opinion, better protection. Now, it only gives you better protection if you know what you're doing and you know how to run a trust, and you don't do foolish things like making yourself the grantor and then making yourself the trustee, or making yourself the grantor and the beneficiary. Now, you can't occupy two places in the structure. You can only occupy one. The other two have to be occupied by somebody else and not a family-related member. So that's how it works, because you can't contract with yourself. You know, you can't write a contract and say, I will do this, and then say, oh, I didn't do it. Okay, I'm going to sue myself now. Obviously, that doesn't work. So,
but now, in terms of you know, offshore trust, because that there's a lot of complication or a lot of confusion with that as well, with people getting those set up, because you hear a lot of times, you know, people get in trouble also for that because they're not set up properly. So when someone says, "Yeah, I'm going to set up an offshore trust," I think we say things, they sound good, and we don't have enough information to back it up.
You have to understand the purpose of an offshore trust. And the purpose of an offshore trust isn't necessarily that to do business within the United States of America.
Well, that's where the trouble comes in.
Right. If I were to set up an offshore trust for myself, I would set it up merely to be a beneficiary of maybe an onshore trust. And it would be better if somebody else set up that offshore trust and not me. Because then if I set it up and I, you know, run it in some way, then I'm occupying two positions if I have any position of the onshore trust. See? Because I'm the beneficiary now, as well as whatever I'm over here. I'm the beneficiary of the onshore trust, and I might have the position of the creator or the trustee of the onshore trust as well. So it's better to have that thing set up and structured or whatever by somebody else and you not be involved in it.
Makes sense. Make absolute sense. Also, next thing that I want to touch on is, as far as, say, travel documents, at this time, let's see, are you placing yourself on an alert list for travel at this point with all of this, you know, everything going on with this whole terrorism fear in terms of the sovereignty papers, filing sovereignty papers? Do you feel that they're setting those people aside regardless of the fact of, they may have granted or acknowledged? What's your take on that?
Well, what do you mean by setting them aside?
Is there a watch list, do you believe? I mean, for people who are trying to... Okay.
Not necessarily, okay?
Okay.
If just because you have gotten evidence that you are who you really are,
mm-hmm.
which is sovereign, okay, being born or naturalized in this country, you are one of the sovereign people of this country.
Right.
And in that case, that is who you are by nature. Now, you can do things that make you look like you're not that person, but that's who you are. You can sign things saying, I'm a U.S. citizen under penalty of perjury. Now you don't look like the sovereign man or woman.
Mm-hmm.
But going on beyond that to your question, do they, you know, put people on watch lists who are sovereign and this kind of stuff? I don't think that's the case. I think if you got people in a group who advocate violence in some way,
mm-hmm.
Those people would be put on the watch list.
Okay.
No matter whether they declare themselves sovereign or not. And anybody who is indeed really sovereign in acting that way would not be threatening harm on anybody.
Right, correct.
We don't need to. The government is our servant. They are not our master. Why should we threaten harm to those who serve us? That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So we, as those who are truly sovereign, understand that we have responsibilities in regards to our servants. We need to, you know, keep them in line, but we also need to keep them healthy and happy. And that's what we try to do. Now, unfortunately, our servants don't realize that they're our servants. And so that is where knowledge, knowing how to deal with these people and through practice and through reading and understanding how to deal with the various government officials, you can help them realize, you know, who they are and who you are. And if you got somebody out there who is acting like a servant or a subject to the United States, and you have someone out there who's acting as a sovereign, these people will start recognizing the difference and give due respect where it's due. And that is what will occur, and that is what is occurring in this country. So
now,
men and women are being respected slowly.
Right.
It's happening.
Right. And it is all a matter of the manner in which you were saying we conduct ourselves. And it's not about testing the system because you think you have papers, you know. And I think some people are really confused with that. It's not a matter of creating situations to have to show you're sovereign. I think that creates more problems.
Well, see, here's the thing. The government assumes. The government works on presumption. In fact, they live on presumption. It's like those little dust mites around the house. They live on the skin that all day long, you know, where
right.
dead skin falls off her body, and they live on that
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The government lives on presumption in the same way. Everything they do is based on some presumption. And the presumption here is that everybody is a subject of the government, because mm-hmm. virtually everybody signed documents under penalty of perjury saying I'm a U.S. citizen. Yeah. They signed things saying I'm a resident. They signed things saying all these things that would say that you're not a sovereign. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the government just presumes, well, you know, pretty much everybody I come in contact with is a subject, and therefore I'll just presume everybody is.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the papers for then? Well, the papers are for the purpose of when you come in contact with the government, to be able to show them that you have evidence that you are not one of these subjects, and all their presumptions that you are is now rebutted. It's now gone. Now, they still may act in presumption, but you have evidence that you are not one of these people they're presuming you are, and therefore you are not under these limitations that all the subjects are under. So that's the purpose of the paperwork. The purpose of the paperwork is to evidence who you are, since most people don't act as a sovereign man or woman. You need something to show that you're not one of the run-of-the-day mill people.
Right.
You are one of the real people, the sovereign people of this country. And the fact is, again, like I say, everybody is a sovereign who's born and naturalized here, but almost nobody acts like it. And so
now,
they
Jim,
come to expect that.
Now, Jim, dwindling down on time, but as far as the immigration process is concerned, when one is, how does that work in terms of the actual law and in terms of one becoming naturalized then? Because then when you become a naturalized citizen, you are then entering into the same deception. So how would one work around that then? I mean, in terms of if you are indeed an immigrant before actually becoming a citizen, how does that work?
Well, what happens is that they tell you, okay, great, you made it. Okay, you go through all the study, and they have you study the Constitution. I'd say that the people who are naturalized probably know more about the Constitution of the United States of America
they do.
Than every single American that's educated in this country does. So, you know, bravo for them. They are doing what all the people in this country should have been doing. But anyway, they have this opportunity at the point that they say, okay, you have successfully completed the class and you made it. What they should do at that point, when they say, okay, we're going to naturalize you as a U.S. citizen, okay, what they should say is, I want to be naturalized as whatever state they're in. California.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I want to be naturalized as an Ohioan or an Arizonian or a New Yorker. I want to be naturalized as one of these people. And that's what they should make the request for. And by doing that, because they won't tell you, the government won't tell you that that's what you should do.
That you have that option, right.
That's right. That's right. So they should make that request, but of course they're not told, so most of them aren't going to make it. But the informed will, and just say, I want to be naturalized as this. And then that is that's a better way to go. Now, the even if you're not naturalized in that way, whatever state you are in when you are naturalized, that's what you are. So if you say you're naturalized through Los Angeles, port of entry into the country, so at this point, then, you would be a Californian.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's, and on the sovereignty papers, when you go before a sovereign court, you would say, I'm a Californian. Because
right.
That's where you're naturalized. Now, what gives this paperwork of sovereignty that I just mentioned any kind of force and effect in this government? What gives it power is the Seventh Amendment to the Constitution. That's why people need to read this thing. In the Seventh Amendment, it tells you that the common law court, the rulings from a common law court, cannot be reviewed by any court in the United States. That means that what the sovereign court rules, the common law court, even the Supreme Court of the United States cannot change what they have determined. Because the common law court is the court of the people, the sovereign people. Who created the government? The sovereign people. So can the subject, the creation of the sovereign man, overrule the sovereign man's decision? The answer is no. And it's in the Constitution, but they can't, just in case they thought they might want to.
But can't people, I mean, with what you're saying, you know, if somebody, I mean, I think people would probably be a little nervous to do it. And I'm talking about immigrants. Because unless they really are confident in what they're saying, I mean, do they run the risk of them going, okay, well, you know what, we're going to throw you out of the country anyway. And how does that work from state to state if they say they're naturalized, you know, if they're from Los Angeles and naturalized here or whatever state? How does that work?
Well, let's say you're born in California and you now live in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
So would you be an Arizonian or would you be a Californian? You'd still be a Californian,
but so
what state you are.
So it doesn't stop you, stop them from moving from one to the other. Then
no, because a sovereign man and woman have the right to go wherever they want. That's called liberty.
And then
go wherever we want.
So then they're still able to get a passport, a U.S. passport to leave. I mean, I'm asking these questions because I know that's what people are wondering. I mean, to go back and forth from.
Yes, you can. You can get that stuff. Now, there is a process for getting that stuff, because if you do it without a Social Security number, which the Social Security number identifies the fiction and the subject, doesn't identify the sovereign man or woman. So if you get a passport without a Social Security number, there are additional steps, and they make it harder, and mostly in the way of identification, to get that passport. But you can get it, and it is doable. So,
but how do they operate after that, because of that whole Social Security number thing and having to work? It's such a catch.
I'm not saying they shouldn't use a Social Security at work for their fiction. I'm just talking about the passport.
So don't apply it towards that, then, is what you're saying.
The passport is for you to go around. Okay?
Right.
Now, they issue it to the fiction. But if you want one for you personally, not for you as the representative of the fiction, then you would want to do it without a Social Security number.
Gotcha.
If you go to work, and again, there's a right way to fill out the W-4 for work, but if you go to work, you use the fiction's Social Security number and the fiction's name on that application, the W-4, because...
Mm.
The fact is that your workplace isn't going to hire you unless you give it to them.
Right, correct.
And even though it's against the law to do that, they're still going to do that. And
well, they don't know the law, though. Yeah.
That's true. They don't know the law. And if you inform them of the law, the people that you inform has no authority to change it. And the upper level will get upset if they try to.
Absolutely. So, and nobody wants to lose their job.
You know, don't create a bad situation at work by not giving them the number. Just give them the number, but make it for the fiction, not for you.
Right.
By assigning the form and all uppercase and things like that, because that's the fiction's name.
Now, Jim, because time-wise, I think we're pretty much there, would you give out contact information? And it's up to you if you mention. I think you still give... classes. I don't know if that's something that you want to mention, but if you would just give us, I think we have about a minute or two.
Okay, well, again, my name is Jim Atatol. My phone number you can reach me at is 310-530-6306. And many times the phone line gets busy, my message queue gets filled, so you may call and there won't be any room for a message. If that's so, just keep calling back. Sometimes it gets filled very quickly, and I can't get to it because I have appointments, et cetera. So just try and be patient, and eventually it'll get unfilled. You can leave a message, or I'll pick up the phone, you know, if I'm not worth somebody talking with them, et cetera. So that would be my contact. What was the other thing you were talking about?
I know you used to give classes in Los Angeles. I don't know if that's something that you want to. You don't have to mention it. I don't know.
We have... We meet actually, I give a short talk for about an hour once a month over in Torrance at Palace Verde's Bowl in the banquet room over there. And we usually start between 7:30 and 8, usually closer to 8 o'clock at night, on the second Wednesday of the month. And let's see, what's the address there? I think it's 26800 Crenshaw Boulevard in Torrance. That would be the, I believe that's the correct address. But the name of the place is Palos Verdes Bowling. And that would be where we meet the second Wednesday of each month, almost every month. But you can give your name to some person there, and they will send you an email confirming whether we're having a meeting on any particular month or not. So, and I'm usually about 2 months out of the year. I can't make it, so usually have it about 10 months out of the year.
Okay, sounds good. Well, thank you again, Jim, for being here, as always. Extremely informative. And I'm sure we'll invite you back again. And to the listening audience, thank you for joining us. And again, join me next Wednesday, the same time, 9 a.m. Pacific time. And remember that the power to be a sovereign mind, a free mind, lies within you. Join me.